It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich and Ken, Christian Arcan will be in just a moment, and we are down at Fenway Park right now before the crowd. A little bit of riot. Oh, there we go. Some Yankees gear. I see.
There we go.
Waiting for the New Yorkers. Knicks fans too, probably.
Yeah.
Come on in.
Wouldn't doubt it. Well, we are at the Ford Clubhouse at Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. And employee pricing for all. You pay what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball. And that dirty water. Well, one of the biggest stories of this NFL offseason wasn't a trade. It was a scandal. One between our own Mike Vrabel and Diana Rossini, the NFL insider. And we all saw the pictures that came out. We all saw the very strange boat rental where she was pregnant and they took pictures with people. Of all the pictures that came out, the ones that made me like, how could you just be so cavalier with this relationship?
It was a bonding exercise.
Sure, that you just took photos and then don't tell anyone. Media and of coaches, course everything yeah. breaks and then this all happens. But the New York Times, who is the parent company of The Athletic, which is of course where Diana Rossini worked, they put out an article yesterday. And it was a pretty extensive article going through some of the new findings that they came up with that is really, it seems to me like it's a teaser for when the actual investigation that The Athletic is doing about Diana Rossini drops. Matter of fact, I don't really know what the purpose of this article was. It did have some interesting things in it, but a guy who's been on top of this entire story, and we've had him on before to talk about it, and amongst other things, is the great Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk. Mike, thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
Guys, how's it going today?
Yeah, good as always. All right, so, you know, we were just talking about this. What do you think the purpose of the New York Times coming out with this article yesterday was when it seems like we're kind of on the horizon of the actual big drop that of the investigation that The Athletic has about Diana Rossini?
I think they felt compelled to engage in some form of journalism as it relates to the biggest off-field story that the NFL has had since the Super Bowl. And my first thought when I saw it was, The Athletic's report of its internal investigation must be coming soon, and they wanted to get ahead of it, and it may very well be the appetizer for what The Athletic is going to eventually publish. Whether they publish it internally, externally, doesn't matter. If they publish it internally, somebody's going to leak it. We're all going to see it at some point, and my guess is it's coming next week, maybe Thursday, maybe Friday. Perfect midsummer bad news dump right before 4th of July.
right. Like, it's going to be Thursday, like Thursday afternoon. Everyone's already got off on their vacations. You know, like, you know, you got the D team that's on like ESPN the next day. So, yeah, I could totally see that happening. But it is weird, wasn't it, Mike, when you're reading an article written by the parent company of the company that's doing their own investigation? It seemed very strange because, like, are they going to tell you everything? Because if they find something bad, that makes them look bad.
Well, and nobody from the Times or the Athletic would speak on the record about the situation to the New York Times. And you make a great point. That was something we wrote today. And I have found 5, 6, 7 different items within this longer article that I think are interesting. But they mention, kind of in passing with just one paragraph, the Julio Jones trade from Atlanta to Tennessee that happened in June of 2021. They don't mention that Vrabel was the head coach of the Titans at the time. And there are some interesting aspects of her reporting from right around the same time that could be used to make the argument that something fishy was going on, that there may have been an effort to help the Titans get Julio Jones. And to not mention any of that, I feel like that at some level there's a desire to ensure that no one takes a step back and says, what did The Athletic know? What should it have known about who they were hiring when they hired her in 2023? So I think that's out there too. I think there's some not so subtle CYA to avoid that question of why did The Athletic hire her in the first place? If there was evidence out there, if there were rumors out there, if whatever was out there, what kind of a vetting did they do?
Yeah, because it seemed like they played dumb in the article, too, because there was a story that they mentioned that was on a podcast she was on. I think she told the story with Stu Gatz, and it was about how she got pulled over, and to get out of a ticket, she asked the officer, who's your favorite football coach? And she got him on FaceTime to get him out of a ticket. And I believe that their quote was just like, well, we're just now finding out about this because she did not ask us to go on a podcast. Once again, doesn't that also seem like everything that's going to come out is just going to make the company that's writing the article look bad? So I question how much they're actually going to release.
Yeah, what it means is they were paying attention to nothing that she was saying on any of these various platforms, or if they were, it never dawned on them that there was anything about it that seemed off base in any way. And look, it's one thing to not just pay the ticket, but leverage a relationship with a coach to try to get out of the ticket, but then to go talk about it publicly.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just judgment lapse on top of judgment lapse. And yeah, maybe the Athletic knew about it and didn't think anything of it, or they're hiding behind this clause in her contract, and all those contracts have it in there. You got to ask for permission. And at the end of the day, nobody does. They just do whatever they do. But what you say is out there. Anybody that wants to know about it, wants to hear about it, can find it easily.
Well, Mike, there was a lot of nothing in there, but as you point out, there are a couple things that you do pause. Like, so she emailed the publisher of The Athletic and two senior editors at the Times to ask to make a text that she had said to a reporter off the record. That is kind of interesting that they put that in there. What do you read from that? What's that mean for the next wave?
Well, anybody who is in the media business, who is engaged in any type of reporting, who has gone to journalism school, and I didn't, but I've kind of learned over 25 years what the rules of the road are. If you just talk to a reporter, anything you say is on the record. You've got to say off the record, and they have to agree to it before anything you say is off the record. And there have been people within the NFL ecosystem that have gotten in trouble with that, whether they knew or should have known better. Sean Payton, a few years ago, if you remember, he said a lot of stuff about the Broncos and former coach Nathaniel Hackett to Jarrett Bell of USA Today, and it made a big uproar. And the reality is, he just forgot to say off the record before he talked to Jarrett Bell. He intended it to be off the record, but somebody who's been doing it for as long as Payton has should know to say, this is off the record. And Russini should have known, or did know, that you have to say off the record. You don't just start responding to a reporter who's asking you for an interview and then at the end of the text message try to say don't use any of this in your story. So that was just kind of odd. And we've seen this, you know, this effort to kind of go around and go over people's heads and complain to people. And I mean, there's a level of aggressiveness that comes through that makes me wonder what's going to happen if and when The Athletic releases its report. Is there going to be something in there that causes her to take some sort of action against The Athletic? I think that's part of what the Times Company, The Athletic, and The New York Times are trying to balance here.
Oh, wow. So you think that she, like, from what comes out of this, she could probably try to, like, sue them for, like, what would she sue them for? I mean, because obviously they're probably not going to release anything unless it's well-researched. I got to think of the New York Times. They've been through things like this before.
Well, a defamation of character case would be very difficult for any public figure to make because the standard is much higher than what it would be for someone who isn't a public figure. But when you consider that all she's said so far, other than what she told the reporter before she tried to take it off the record, is that nothing happened. There's nothing to see here. This is all something that the media made up that is unmoored from the facts. That was from her resignation letter, and she hasn't said anything since then. So if she insists that there was nothing there and these reports and these comments and whatever The Athletic may find that she did, however they characterize it, nothing stops her from doing it. It may go nowhere, but nothing stops her from doing it.
What do you believe Diana Russini's next move is?
I think she's going to resurface somewhere as a podcaster, a radio host, an opinion maker. And I think there will be an element of reporting that maybe trickles into what she does, even though she won't be a reporter. There's plenty of radio hosts who quote-unquote know people and who quote-unquote hear things and share them. And, you know, if it's right, hey, I'm right. And if it's wrong, oh, it's just what I was hearing from somebody I know. So if she's able to maintain a network of people who talk to her, she'll be able to weave some reporting into whatever it is she does. But I suspect at some point, and I don't know where it will be, but at some point, at the right time, she'll resurface with, even if it's her own podcast, that she starts from her house. I don't think she's going to go away forever. We know, you know, no matter how, and I'm not trying to say this is worse than that or that's worse than this, but for pretty much anything, once enough time passes, everybody forgets about it and moves on, and people who go away for a while, they come back, and it's like it never happened.
Do you think if she, because I was thinking at first that she'd have to address this at some point, like she would have to break the dam, like her first big appearance, she would have to address it. But then I was thinking, she's paid off. She doesn't have to address it. She can just kind of move on. Do you think that that's realistic, that potentially she could be paid to not say anything?
Well, I think that there's always a chance that she's going to agree to sit down with someone and do an interview. As long as the interest lingers to interview her to get her story, that possibility is going to be out there. And one of the things I've been saying about the Patriots week one game at Seattle, Wednesday, September 9, Tuesday night, September 8 would be the perfect time for her to sit down with Oprah or whoever and tell her story. I don't know that anyone's going to care by September, but look, here we are 2.5 months removed from it, and it's still a big deal. So I've thought at some point that's one of her options, to tell her story, whatever her story may be. Nobody knows what her story is because she's hardly said anything about it. That may be her way to kind of get back into the mix, depending upon how compelling the story is, depending upon whether or not it generates any sympathy or people understand her side of it. Again, we're just guessing because we have no idea what she would say if she would do an interview like that. But to me, before the Times report came out, I thought there were two ways that this story could get more oxygen. One, the Athletic's report of its internal investigation, and two, when she tells her story, wherever she tells her story, however she tells her story.
Were you surprised, Mike, that the Patriots did get that opening game?
Yeah, yes and no. I know the NFL's position is it was too hard to resist having a Super Bowl rematch right out of the gates, but they've had Super Bowl rematches before that weren't right out of the gates. It's only the third time it's ever happened, dating all the way back to after the Vikings and the Chiefs played in Super Bowl IV. So it was surprising. I don't know that the average football fan has the appetite to tune back in for the first game that they'll watch after the Super Bowl and see the same thing that they saw from Santa Clara, because that's the reality. And we always remind ourselves of this at NBC since we have the first game every year. There's a lot of people who are going to tune into that game on Wednesday, September 9, who have been paying attention to not very much at all. And I don't know how many of those people are going to be thrilled. Now, I still think there's a chance the Patriots could win the game, but the fact that the Super Bowl itself just felt like one of those old 70s-style suffocation Super Bowls, yeah, it's easy to make the argument that there are more compelling opponents on Seattle's home schedule.
Mike, there was something in this article that I want to ask you about. I totally forgot about it because I don't know how odd this is. And there was a – God, I wish I had the article in front of me on how they worded it, but it was something along the lines of when Vrabel had was done with the Titans – that she was basically someone helping guide his career, like she was a helper, maybe keeping him in contact with the powers that be. It almost sounded like she was acting somewhat as like a mini agent for him. Do you have this right? Oh, you have it right here? It says,
yeah, like an unofficial advisor.
Yeah, that's what it was, like an unofficial advisor to Mike Vrabel. Does that happen with insiders, or is this something completely out of bounds?
One of the realities of this entire situation, and I know that the people who are quote-unquote insiders get nervous about this, it does expose a lot about how that business works. And I've written about it. I've spoken about it. When we see insiders breaking transactional news when someone signs a contract, it happens all the time now. An agent will send out a text message to multiple people at the same time, and then it's a race to see who can be the first one to copy it, paste it, and post it on Twitter. It happened yesterday with Brendan Strange's contract, because I don't try to get those anymore because, number one, my audience doesn't care that that someone else had it before this other person.
But right,
second,
right.
I don't want to play this game where I've got to, in order to be at the front of the line, I've got to make sure I name the agents and put the Twitter handle of the firm. And I got the text yesterday on Brendan Strange, and I sent it to my staff, and I said, you watch and see how many people tweet exactly what was texted. And at least two of them did.
Yeah. So I was just, that was a weird thing in that article. I didn't really understand what they meant by that, that they were, you know, like she was helping him out that way. It was kind of wild how many Titans games she covered as a national reporter. Like it was like half a season essentially that was down there. It's like now that you see all this stuff, it's like how many people must have known, right? I mean, I don't know how you can do what they did and people around you just not know what was going on.
And I think this is the core issue as it relates to the New York Times and the Athletic. The Times has a very high bar when it comes to journalistic standards. But I think when you're hiring someone who's covering the NFL in that insider role, You just want the information. There are certain things you don't care about if you're the producer, if you're the editor, if you're the network. And you could argue that if this story had emerged while she was working for any other company, and I'm not going to name any, I'm just saying anyone other than the New York Times, where that bar is lower, maybe they just kind of turn a blind eye to it, because at the end of the day, it's effective. It works. It gets you news. That's why they're there. And I think there's plenty of people in management positions that don't care how they get it, as long as they get it.
Yeah, exactly. And the one thing that's going to get them, I think, in the most trouble is if they find out that there was some sort of way that the trade market was manipulated because of her relationship. Like, that Julio Jones thing is interesting. I mean, that truly could have. I mean, and we don't even know what else there could be. I mean, that's like the first one that you see, and obviously the most obvious example. But if there comes out proof that, you know, their relationship manipulated that, the Times could be in legitimate trouble.
Well, and I know a lot of Eagles fans were upset about the perception that there was reporting that potentially impacted the A.J. Brown trade to the Patriots, that maybe the Patriots got better terms because of some of the reporting. So I would expect that The Athletic is taking a close look at everything she has reported that relates directly or indirectly to Mike Vrabel during the 3 years that she worked for The Athletic. I don't know that ESPN is doing anything. I reached out to them. Once we saw the photos that the New York Post published right before the draft of Vrabel and Russini at a bar in New York City, which I think those photos were a lot more "we know what we see here" than the original photos that came out, I reached out to ESPN to see if they were doing anything, and they aren't saying anything about this. I think from their perspective, they don't want to dredge up any of this, but you raise fair questions. What do people know? When did they know it? And ultimately, do they care? If there was anything going on that maybe wasn't something that satisfies strict journalism standards, do they really care, or do they care about getting these stories before anyone else does?
Well, we will find out when the investigation is released at 5 p.m. on July 3rd. Right when everyone...
That'd be too obvious, though, right? I think it's going to be Thursday, because Friday would be too obvious. And I could see The Athletic talking themselves into doing it Wednesday, because Thursday would be obvious that you were trying to avoid Friday. So maybe it's going to be Wednesday, July 1st.
I like it. Place your bets. We'll see who's the closest. All right. Well, great stuff, Mike Florio. We love having you on. ProFootballTalk.com. And obviously all over the interwebs. Thanks for coming on, Mike. We appreciate
it. Thanks, guys.
All right, see you, man. Yeah, that article was interesting, but it just seems like they're putting stuff, they're getting you ready for
phase one.
Yep, this is phase one. Mm-hmm. That's what it felt like. It felt like, just get ready, here we go. I also think they tried to put in that thing, she didn't want us to publish this her text to us, but we're going to publish it anyway, right, to try to make it sound like we're going to be real tough on her when we release this. They're tattling on their own company. I don't know how
can you not get the editors to comment?
Right. It's like right. The New York Times cannot get a comment from the New York Times on this article. It was really freaking weird. All right, we have to break, but we'll be back in 2 minutes. Christian Arcanis here. Oh, well, that was fun. Thank you, Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk, for joining us. It's Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, and Christian Arcanis in studio with us for the
What's up? How we doing, OE?
What's happening?
That was really good stuff there from Florio.
He's not afraid to say things.
Yeah.
That's one thing I will say about him. We had him on like a time before, and there was a comment he made that was like so incendiary that I would...
He didn't go back there. I thought he might.
Well, so the first time I actually kept asking him questions until he got to a point where it's like, well, here's what could happen. That could be a worst case scenario.
This would be really
bad. Son of a bitch.
Yeah, you're right. That would be bad. That would be really bad.
That was one of those things where I was just like, I feel irresponsible paraphrasing you, so I'm going to have to write down word for word what you said. So when I report, of course, I don't have it right now. But yeah, that article was very weird. I just found it weird. It's like the New York Times is tattling on the New York Times. So how much do you trust that the New York Times is going to call out the New York Times and how bad the New York Times was?
And the thing about the executives not responding for comment was pretty funny. Like, hey, we're writing this article about ourselves. Like, yeah, no comment.
Yeah, no comment from me.
We're good.
Even though I'm writing it. Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. And he's right. By the next week, this was a teaser for the big drop that's going to happen. And I don't even know how big it's going to be.
It'll be a hit piece on her. Because they had two little hit pieces here. They had the traffic incident, right? And they had her, like, didn't go on the record, off the record. So they'll talk to everybody in her community in New Jersey about how bad she is as a person. Like, and you know, and when she goes to the grocery store, just we were bad, but Diana was really bad. She was an awful person.
I agree with Florio, though. I think that she is going to have a very good career when this is all done and over with. And I think she's probably going to enjoy life a little bit more. I guarantee you, like a gambling site or something's going to pick her up to do something kind of like the Kay Adams show or whatever, or like, you know, one of those like where she interviews athletes and talks with them. Or even like another radio show. I know she's friends with Stu Gatz, and Stu Gatz likes her a lot, and maybe they could do a show together.
Didn't he just get kicked off that show, though? Didn't Stu Gatz just get kicked off Dan Lebatard?
Stu Gatz got his own thing, though. No. Like, he's not with Lebatard anymore, right? Like, Stu Gatz has his own thing.
It just happened. Correct. I thought he just left.
Well, they took his name off the show. Maybe you're right. I actually haven't been paying a ton of attention there, but I do know that she's kind of entertaining.
She is. But can she keep, I think of her kids. You know, like, is she going to keep doing that and be, like, saucy and all this when everyone knows, like, sort of what she's done? Like, is she going to keep herself out there in public with those two little boys, with the little sons, you know?
I think that it's something that was obviously, you know, at the time, shocking to everyone. Mm. But I do believe that there's enough people out there who have been on the other side of that situation or have been in that situation where you're going to realize, all right, you shouldn't have done that. It's awful. But we're not going to hate you for the rest of your life. You see, I mean, you are a flawed human being. And I think that most people tend to forgive. We see it in sports all the time. There's guys out there who beat their kids and you're cheering for them to, you know, score touchdowns, which is insane. So if you do that, I guarantee you someone who had an affair, you're going to eventually probably just be like, all right, well, you know.
Not if it impacted my trade of my Eagles receiver. Right? I'll never forgive her for that. Cost us a second-round pick.
It is wild because she totally could have effed over a couple of teams.
Oh, totally.
Like that. Now, that part is very interesting to me and how bad that was. But I think she'll have a good career. And I wonder how she's going to come out and say anything. I think that there's a way out of it to where it sounds like, you know, you shouldn't have done it, but I'm teaching my children right now that you can make bad decisions and come out on the other end smarter and stronger. And that's one of those things that I've seen people put spins on. And matter of fact, that's almost word for word exactly what the Coldplay woman who was in the, she did an article with, I forget, it might've been the New York Times.
Why are people doing articles about her?
Because
was she like an inspiration or something? Like,
she was like the biggest story in America for like a week. Like,
where's the story on the guy? Like, who cares? You know, like,
well, we know the guy.
Was she like a role model now? Like, we're supposed to like take lessons from this woman? Like, what's going on here?
No, but she hired it sounds like she hired a PR firm to do this like article that's basically to save her reputation. And the article was, actually the first thing she said was that she was already separated from her husband, but they just hadn't told anybody, which I don't know if that's true or not, but she said that. But the other part
she didn't tell him yet.
Yeah, I guess not. But the other part of it was, you know, I want to teach my kids that I'm growing and that you can make mistakes. And you know what? That's probably the absolute best thing you can say if you want to get people to go, okay. And who cares if it's
had anyone
sincere?
Thought of her in months? I mean, I think she wanted to be in an article. I think she wanted her name back in the
media. I guarantee
in the media.
You
she wanted Rich Shirton leave talking about it.
She would have given everything in her life so that article didn't have to come out.
One thing that he said that I was thinking about that I was couldn't really shake was how she may be fixing to like sue the Athletic before this thing even comes out. She resigned. So how is she going to sue? It's not like they wrongfully terminated her.
It's because if they write an article that's slanderous, and they write, but which, by the way, the New York Times will not. Because,
there's no way they're going to do that.
But if she believes that there's something written in there that is untrue, that defames her, then she could try. I don't see that.
The Times have good lawyers. They're going to eat her for lunch. You kidding me?
I agree with you.
But even more interesting from this region's perspective, is there anything in there that's damaging to Vrabel more so than her and her career to come? Because I think that's really all most fans care about, right? Is there something else that has him on edge this year and distracts him from the team?
This is interesting, because here's the only thing that I think he could get in trouble for outside of anything weird that we don't know about, like as far as like sexual or anything like that. But the one thing that I think he could legitimately get in trouble for is if he and Diana Rossini willingly manipulated news in order to get better deals for trades. I know the AJ Brown, like if it comes out that the two of them had actual concrete discussions of news that she should leak out in order to have trades be more favorable towards either the Patriots or when he was with the Titans, that's a big deal. And then the other teams will get pissed at Mike Vrabel. But I don't know if that's
you'd have to get a team source either on the record or just a, you know, not on the record, but a source from the Titans says blank.
Yeah.
And that, I guess, could happen, but my hunch is these teams have skeletons in their closet.
No question.
They won't want to touch them.
It would be very tough to prove, but that's the only thing I could think, because that's a big deal, the manipulation of trades. Like, that's going to piss off a lot of teams, and also there's got to be some sort of rules that you have violated, which, you know.
I would call every member of the Jets organization for the last 10 years. Do you hate Mike Vrabel? Do you want to go on the record?
Right.
You hate
not?
The Patriots? Do you hate Robert Kraft?
Why on the record, you know? All right, 617-779-7937. According to Brian Windhorst, Jaylen Brown's as good as gone. He is going to get traded, I think, are his words. And we have some other news that's come up. Apparently, Jaylen Brown's brother's tweeting mysterious stuff. There's all sorts of weird guys named Robot Dave saying they've got inside sources on Jason Tatum, doesn't like it. We will talk to all about all that here right after this.
The only person that hasn't talked during this whole scenario has been Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
Like, Jason Tatum needs it. Like, Brad Stevens said what he needed to say. And you know what? I think Jason Tatum needs to step up and say, that's my dude. We won a championship. We're going to try to run it back one more time. I don't know if that's his role, but I do know one thing. Brad Stevens realized they can't make a trade to get someone close to as good as Jaylen Brown, offensively, defensively, and in the way the game's being played.
Can I make a quick rule? No Chili Peppers beds post Blood Sugar Sex Magic. I think we go anything Blood Sugar Sex Magic or before. As a matter of fact, anything from Mother's Milk is encouraged.
I like to hear the other side. That's good lick. Good job, Stiz.
See, Rick
I
Rubin,
even timed it out so that when Seth got done speaking, the beat dropped.
What a beat it is. Let's just noodle around and whisper the chili. We used to come out with socks on our crotch, and now we whisper and barely play.
You have to evolve, Rich. You can't just keep doing that troll.
Someone, and Rick Rubin is one of the greatest producers in history, but the worst thing he ever did was convince Anthony Kiedis that he could sing. Anthony, have you ever heard him live? Oh, boy. Not good. But that being said, Blood Sugar Sex Magic, where he sang a lot, awesome, is un-effing believable. That's a great album. All right, it is Rich, Ken.
That's Rich's favorite.
I can play the guitar like a mother effing riot, and then it's followed by the worst guitar solo.
Just not going to right now?
No, it's not going to. A little bit later.
I'm going to do this.
We're being ironic. It is Rich, Ken, and Christian Arcan here on 937 WEER. We are down at Fenway right now, and it is turning out to be a beautiful day. Absolutely.
Lots of Yankees fans strolling by.
Yep, yes, there are. It is. That was Seth Greenberg, and he was saying that Jason Tatum needs to say something about this whole Jaylen Brown deal. Now, if you haven't heard what's been going on over the last 24 hours with this whole, you know, this is my favorite season, and Jaylen Brown's just made it worse. And he's right in the middle of a place now where his name's been thrown out. It's not just thrown out. It's essentially been confirmed that he was offered in this Giannis trade. And according to Brian Windhorst, he's gone. But the one thing that Jaylen Brown is doing is he won't shut up about this whole deal with Stephen A. Smith. Like, he is just feeding Stephen A. Smith. And I know he hates Stephen A. Smith. He's got that, or doesn't hate him, but he looks at him as an adversary, the state your source crap. But he just keeps this whole thing alive. And they're
like the Coldplay lady.
Yeah, like the Coldplay
thing.
Lady.
It's the same
just
thing.
Just calling the New York Times saying, interview me, baby. This thing that destroyed my and my family's lives, I want you to talk about it more.
But then if you feel that way, aren't you proud of Tatum for not speaking? So I that's where I think I'm almost coming around to. Greenberg's wrong, and we were wrong earlier. Maybe Tatum did the best thing by just keeping quiet. That's why the Celtics love him.
I'm a sports talk radio host. I'm never wrong.
Yeah, but sometimes you are, and then you can pivot to something else.
Yes.
So in this case, Tatum is the gold standard. Now, I know he could have saved Jaylen just by going on the podcast or saying something beyond a meme of Denzel. But, you know, he's made himself look better, and you're right. Jaylen keeps making it worse by the more he speaks every day.
Sis, can you play the clip of this is Jaylen Brown at Cannes? Being interviewed. And what's so weird about this clip is that this is the only clip that you see of him speaking that I've been able to find anywhere. If anyone can find like a longer clip, let me know if it exists, because this is literally how it starts and how it ends. Let's take a listen.
Leader behind that was ESPN. ESPN is unethical. And Stephen A. Smith is the head face of that. But, you know, the organization, the players, they were all in agreement. They all knew what I meant by that. Our team was basically salary dumps. You know, we lost a lot of players. And for us to emerge and still be in the same position.
Okay. So then there he is kind of dumping on the Celtics ownership too.
And the team kind of. But it's some salary dump crap roster and me, and we won.
Now that's me playing a little bit of sports talk radio.
It's true. In that case, he's right.
It is. But the one thing that he's talking about is he's talking about how Stephen A. Smith's the worst. You know, how dare you read into my comment that this was my favorite season as being a slam on Jason Tatum. Stephen A. Smith isn't the only one who thinks that. I don't know how else you can interpret that. It seems like, and you know what? If everybody's wrong, and by the way, this is a fight now that Stephen A. Smith, we played the clip earlier, where he got all angry and then he got all whispery.
He's so full of I want to throw up.
Right. He spent apparently 10 minutes on First Take this morning and another 15 minutes on one of his 14 podcasts talking about this because you know why? You made his nipples hard. When you said his name, he's like, yes, here come the clicks, baby. People are going to be talking about Stephen A. Flick, flick, flick. He's a bottom feeder. He loves asses and he loves when people talk about him. So in this case, he is, once again, Jalen is turning this into something that it doesn't need to be. It's blown up.
And but ironically, Stephen A. at the end says, Jalen's just doing this for clicks. He's trying to get people to watch his Twitch stream. It's just a back and forth. It's a total echo chamber. These two accusing the other of just being clickbait artists.
But the one thing that I have now started to think is Jason Tatum has a great agent, obviously, because what he said to him is after they lost, he was like, just disappear. Just don't say anything. If you want to be the face of, you know, you want to be on the Doritos bag, don't make any enemies. You want to be in all the endorsements instead of Jaylen Brown, you just keep your mouth shut and
one Denzel video and that's it.
Yeah, that's right. No one can say anything against you if you don't say anything. But in this case, where the whole world is essentially telling Jaylen Brown, hey, man, you really pissed off Jason Tatum. That was a shot at Jason Tatum. And if I was Jason Tatum, I would be pissed. All it takes is for Jason Tatum to send out one measly Instagram post or tweet. Just a picture of the two of them together that says like brothers for life or you know, love this guy or JB or anything that would squash it immediately. But he hasn't said anything. And I'm telling you, if I was Jason Tatum, and he doesn't have to do anything. He doesn't. But it sure does seem like he's leaving him to hang himself right now. Like,
because he's
like,
pissed.
I'd be sick and tired of him talking about how it was his favorite year. If they were close like that, wouldn't that be his least favorite year? He didn't get to play with his best friend, Jason Tatum. Like, I wouldn't want to rush to his defense now either.
And you know what? There could be a perfectly logical explanation for what Jay, you know, I've heard, matter of fact, Steve in the car. All right, we'll take him real quick. Steve, hey. Real quick, make your point because it's a great one.
So I'm just curious, like, could we possibly, like, Jaylen Brown, obviously we know he carried the team this year. He never said that in what he said. Is there a chance he could be saying, like, the team defied all odds and, you know, the national narrative coming into the season was not a playoff team and they somehow found a way to get the 2 seed and ultimately fell short of, you know, where we wanted the championship. But they, again, defied the odds and they strung together a good season by coming together. Is that, you know, a chance that he could be saying?
Is that better than winning a championship? That's ridiculous,
Steve. No, I agree with you. Okay. The one thing I agree with Steve is that I think in Jaylen Brown's mind, he was feeling great because this is the first year he showed the world I can do this on my own.
Right.
I've got these people behind me. And you know what? The team came together and rallied around me. But the one thing he's forgetting about is that you can't say that when Jason Tatum wasn't part of it.
Right. You can't say it out loud. Yeah. I mean, he can think it, but I agree with not saying it. But I just think we could be possibly reading into it too much and, you know, blaming him for what he's saying. And when he ultimately is saying, you know, we came together as a team and, you know, that's just my 2 cents. But.
Well, Steve, to your point,
yep.
If that's the case, if it's all wrong and he's like being misinterpreted, who could stop that from like hurting him? Who could stop that from hurting his reputation and all the talk that he obviously hates Jason Tatum? Who could be the one person who could put out a
tweet? Definitely Tatum, for sure. But I also understand why Tatum could feel some type of way about him saying that because obviously he wasn't there. So it's kind of, it's tough, but I think he should never just, you know, not say it in the first place. But I also think that he's not taking a shot at JT. I don't think he's saying he's the best. I just think he's saying, you know, we found a way to get the 2 seed after everybody counted us out.
You know what, Steve, great call. And you know what, I have a feeling that Jason Tatum, I know he's been trying to stay out of this. But if you really think that Jalen's the guy and you don't want him to leave and that you're sick of him being slandered and you, it takes 2 seconds to stand up for your guy. But that's it.
But he can't do that if Brad's trying to trade him. And then I think you go back to, when did they loop Tatum into the Giannis trade? Because I do believe Brad would have talked to Tatum and said, are you okay as our franchise player with us shopping Jalen to get Giannis?
Ooh, that's a great point.
And he would have had to have said yes.
That's a great point. Because you could even excuse Tatum for not knowing about some of the earlier trades because he was younger. But right. Now he's officially the face of the team.
Like, now we're blowing it up and we're making you the centerpiece. Except that Giannis is a star. But you have to talk to Tatum before that trade, right?
Do you, though?
Yes, yes.
Do you, Christian? Do you have to talk to him?
You don't think Brad's...
I think so.
Yeah.
If he's the one guy you're not trading, then I feel like you have to at least loop him in on it. Or say, hey, if we trade Jalen Brown, is this okay with, you know, like...
And how do you like Giannis? And how do you think you guys would play together? And
right.
What's your relationship like that? I'm sure they would have taken it.
If he's off the table, if you're not trading Jason Tatum, and this is the guy that we're building around hell or high water, then yeah, I think you have to.
That's interesting. Well, then the silence from Jason Tatum seems even louder right now. Mm. And that's a decent point.
And now reporters are saying he's going to get moved definitively. Now that could be, we had one who was a Boston Bar guy who said this is just they're just faking everybody.
I wanted
out.
To drive off the road during that call, by the way. I was driving here. I almost drove into the
road. How dare you say that about our callers? I respect our callers, even if they have controversial takes like that one.
Oh, my God.
But that means then you have sources feeding Windhorse the wrong stuff. You know,
right.
You know what I mean? Like, hey, we're moving them. No, we're not really.
All right, we'll take your calls, and Christian will get mad at you. 617-779-7937. We'll get into a little bit more of this. Also, we've got... we've got some interesting stuff on Craig Breslow as well. And it always feels like a sin talking as bad about the Red Sox as we do, literally standing in Fenway Park right now. But it has to be done. Oh, it has to be done. And we'll do that right after this. This is 93.7 WEEI. Rich certainly, Ken Laird, Christian Arcand, and we are at Fenway Park right now, broadcasting from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and employee pricing for all. You pay what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball and that dirty water. And I have to be honest, it feels as if the World Cup in Boston is already over. It's like when the Scots left, it just died. I have to be honest, I was so excited to see what the English would do when they came here. Like, whoa. If the Scots are insane, and I mean, they're look, they're drinking these bars out of beer, and everyone's partying, and they're, well, wait till the English show up. Ah, the English are boring.
No.
They have been boring.
Sad trombone.
Everywhere around town, it's like, I mean, it truly feels like it's already over. I mean, even like the fans of Iraq were crazy. They were out in Boston Common going nuts. There was like the Haitians, right? Like that there was like a Haitian parade going down Boylston Street. Like every day felt like a party while Scotland and Haiti and all over. And now that I know the English just finished, but it was the most boring. They didn't do anything. There was a video.
Didn't score a goal.
Like having Yankee fans in town.
Like, sure. I guess so. There was
Same thing. There
was a video of the English waiting at South Station to get on the train. And they just looked like miserable people trying to get on a train. Whereas when the Scottish were there, it was like, no Scotland, no party. No,
oh, look at these guys.
No,
they're still into it.
Yeah. It's truly like a different breed of person. The English just seem like this is like a work trip for them.
Well, tomorrow is France-Norway, right? That's supposed to be the big one.
And I'll say this about the Norwegians. You called it. They were a one-trick pony. They showed up and did the videos of them rowing, and then the party's over.
We're Vikings, yeah.
Like, where are they now? Yeah, like,
they were at the Mets game. Did you see that?
Are they really?
Yeah, they were at the Mets game. The Cubs hit a home run at Citi Field, and they cut to the crowd, and it's all the Norwegians all dancing around. It was very, very
funny. Well, I mean, I'm sure they're fine, but I just don't – they don't – and maybe it's just because the Scottish were so insane.
Oh, yeah, it's tough to follow.
Like, I miss their drinking bars out of beer. I miss the cones on the statues, although there's still some statues that I have no idea how they got the cones up there that are still – over in Boston Common. Like, there's the one that's right over by the center on the hill. There's one that's way up there. I'm like, how the hell did they get that there without a pick? But I miss them bringing life to garbage games at Fenway Park and hearing them on the TV and being like, how can that place be that loud right now? man, it just seems every other country that's come here has dropped the ball since Scotland left.
Now, you have high hopes for Germany next Monday, right? Because that is the first knockout round. They'll play, I think, Australia. So Germany, Australia, Monday at Boston Stadium could be good.
Okay, Germany and Australia, on paper, should absolutely effing rule.
Yeah.
Like, they should be out of their minds. I've seen how the Germans do at Oktoberfest. They throw down, although it's usually international people who go to Oktoberfest, amongst the Germans. But no, Germans know how to have a great time when it comes to drinking and having, taking over a city like this. And you would think that Australians, if it's Australians coming here, hell yes. But my goodness, I couldn't have been more disappointed with what England gave us. It's really just like...
He just got locked out of the Dubliner. That's all that happened. That's the only notable thing.
Well, that story was great. Like, that story was fantastic. That the owner of the Irish, they hold grudges, and I love it. And so Scotland comes and basically, makes the Dubliner their home base. And they're having a great time, and no Scotland, no party. And then after they leave, on the day of the England match, they shut down the Dubliner, and they put out a press release that said, since there's nothing big happening today, we're going to give our workers the day off. I love it.
Elite trolling.
I love it. It was elite trolling in every sort of way. And I wanted the English to go crazy. I wanted them to... This town has rarely been this fun in the middle of the summer. And they took it over, and for the better. And now it makes people want to go to Scotland. Hell, I want to go to Scotland now. It seems like a lot of fun. If everyone's like that, hell yeah, I want to go there.
Now, are you ready to break down the big U.S.-Bosnia-Herzegovina match? Next week.
What about Turkey?
Well, Turkey is tonight, but that's like irrelevant.
Why is it pronounced like Turkey? Or why do some people spell it Turkey and then some people spell it with the umlauts?
I read this somewhere. I don't know if it's true, but the Turkish were upset that it's pronounced Turkey like the bird.
Okay.
So they had to change it for the international community.
Okay.
They felt like they were getting disrespected like Jalen.
Well, once again, I'll pronounce anything the way that people want it to be pronounced. I'm fine with that. I've just never seen that before.
Especially if we trade for Şengün, because he's Turkish, isn't he?
I'm not sure if he is. So we still got what?
He's Turkish.
Turkish?
Yes.
We got Norway and France.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any.
Well, that's Mbappe and Haaland. So that's like the two biggest stars in the tournament outside of Messi. So that should be huge Friday.
And there's like huge celebrities in town.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I guess like Beckham was here. And I know that, the guys from like Mumford & Sons who were here like went to the game. And I said,
I was
stars. I just named two people.
Way.
What's that?
I was the Rufus show here at Fenway, by the way.
It was awesome. It was great. You know, you were talking about how when you went to Sammy Hagar,
You're
like, wow, I'm really this old.
Oh, yeah.
I had the same reaction, except I was like so much older than everybody.
Well, that's like, better. Oh. It's better than my scenario.
Yeah, it was like a club. I mean, they turned Fenway Park into basically a dance club, but the sunset was awesome. Yeah, it was great. It was a really good show.
Hey, Rich, you know who else made an appearance for the England game?
Who?
It's Geezer Butler, Black Sabbath bass player.
Oh, Geezer Butler just saved a bunch of beagles from a big farm or something like that for Black Sabbath. I'm just saying that Germany and Australia, if they're the team, they got a lot of step. They got to step up because England was a disappointment, a massive disappointment.
I even was following some of the Scottish people we befriended here and watching them in Miami and felt like they were kind of cheating on us.
Yeah,
some
right.
Some of them are like, I want to move to Miami. This place is great. I mean, like, the hell?
It's like your girlfriend leaving you and you're dating someone else. Although I did see a great video where they were interviewing people who went down to Miami and they said, what'd you like better, Miami or Boston? They're like, I have to go back to Boston.
Oh, good.
Yeah, they all love Boston. So good for them. You're welcome back here anytime.
I'd stay in Miami. Like, this is pretty good down here.
Miami in June, nope. I will take none of
that's
that.
True, yeah.
Miami in June, no thank you. All right. This Jaylen Brown story just has gotten so weird. Noah Dalzell, she is a great writer for the Celtics blog and the You Got Boston podcast. She's going to come on with us next to give us the latest on everything that is happening. And we are not going anywhere. We'll be back in just 2 minutes with her. We'll be right back.